Perfect time to start recording. So, Marcus, Blake,
yo.
Carla, how's your trades going?
Going fantastic. Happy to be here. Bullish.
Happy to be here. I'm happy to be here too. Thanks everyone for tuning in. This is Bitcoiner's Guide, the show that we wish we would have had when we first started learning about Bitcoin. So we made it for you. We're here. It's Plan Marcus, Big Sean. We're here with Blakey, Blake, Carla, special guest today. I don't even know what is today. Honestly, it is what? I'm looking at my phone.
Today is the first day for Bitcoiner's Guide that we actually have two people on the stream instead of just one guest. So yeah, it's another first for you right here.
Two people in one video. We have had multiple guests on at once.
Only from the meme factory, and that doesn't count.
No. See, Marcus doesn't remember. We had Chinchilla, Surfer Jim, and Mel on one time.
Oh, nice. Big party.
All right. Well, good luck editing this out, Sean.
I'm gonna tag in all three of them.
Yeah, they're mentioned.
No, okay. So today is February 26th, whatever. Bitcoin's doing its thing as normal. We got Blake and Carla here, and before we started recording, we started talking about Carla, and she is an international fugitive on the run.
Yes, I am.
So we wanted to start recording, so maybe why don't we do like a little just backtrack of what your band in the United States? Tell us the story.
Yes, so this happened last summer. Yeah, we were headed to the States to spend 4th of July with family. And basically the government didn't like that and decided to ban me. They took me to, as soon as we arrived at the border, they started
in Seattle.
In Seattle, yes, mm-hmm. Blue State, you know.
So you guys were flying in or driving in from?
Yeah, we were flying in from Cancun. So we're in Mexico. We're flying to Seattle. We had a layover there and then we're going to Portland. And we had a two-hour layover. But yeah, as soon as they scanned my passport, they started asking me a million questions. And then they took me back to a back room where they questioned people. And I had to wait for like 3 hours until I got my turn. I don't know why, but yeah, they basically asked me a million questions about my background, of what I did for work, and what were my intentions in the States, how I was supporting myself. And then they even asked me, like,
Carla has a complicated background. She's done a lot of traveling.
Yes.
She's got two nationalities. She's,
yeah.
So, like, whenever you're in those situations, it's difficult to
ask. Did they ask you how much Bitcoin you have?
I didn't mention it just in case. They were asking me, like, how much money do you have? How many credit cards do you have? How much savings do you have? Like, so many invasive questions.
Really?
Yeah. It was pretty.
That's crazy. The best thing about Bitcoin is they can't check how much Bitcoin you have.
That's true.
And we've told people this story, and we've heard people get asked if they have Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We won't say the person's name, but yeah.
Yeah,
that's when you bring up the boating accident.
Yeah.
I got in a boating accident. I bought some more. I got $5 wrench attacked. It's a scam, you know, it's a Ponzi. Yeah,
it truly is. So, yeah, no, basically they kept me there. They interrogated me twice. Once it was very informal. The guy was just taking out notes on a piece of paper. And then the second time it was official. And they got me on the fact that the last time that I had been to the States, which was for BitBlock Moon in 21, on my first day in the country, I submitted work that I had done previously. It was just two articles that I wrote while I was in Mexico. And me submitting those two articles on US soil counted as me violating my tourist visa, and they said, well, you should have had a work visa to do that, and it was pretty insane. And so they just said that they canceled my visa, so my permission to fly into the country. And yeah, I got sent back and I had to spend the entire night in jail, basically. No phone, no communication with the outside. And he was waiting for me and he had no clue what was happening. So
were they not letting you know, Blake? Were they not, they didn't say, hey, this is the, you know, this is a status, this is what's going on. Like they didn't let you know at all.
There's absolutely zero communication. And like, this is a completely new experience for me. I don't know like anything about the customs world, but you learn a lot very quickly. That one, customs and like the airport, like the customs port authority, or the port authority and then customs are like two completely separate entities that don't even talk to each other. But yeah, so this was like a wild experience because, you know, you do your classification and you're going through customs, show your passport, answer a question or two, and usually you get through just fine. But the agent working clearly had an agenda. He looked right at Carla and started immediately asking her questions, didn't even look at my stuff, started asking her like deep questions about work history, what she's doing, how she's supporting herself, blah, blah, blah. And it was just very weird very quickly. And normally you kind of have those moments, but then they pass. But all of a sudden, he takes her passport, takes her phone, puts it in a bag, and says, you need to do a secondary check.
Oh, my God.
So I'm thinking to myself, okay, they're gonna take her behind this wall. They're going to look at her suitcase, open up a few things, ask her a few more questions, and boom. And so...
Yeah, sometimes you get your hands swabbed or something like that.
We've all had little moments like that, but then this one just kept going. And so all of a sudden she's gone, and I'm like, fuck, I didn't like communicate to her like have a plan, like what, because I didn't think too much of it.
Well, me neither. And the guy just told you, oh, wait for her there.
Yeah. Okay. And then you start realizing the bullshit that, that happened. Because then they take me aside, they're like, you gotta wait right here. They tell me you can wait right here. And like I can still see kind of like where she went. And then I'm looking at my watch, I'm thinking about our next flight. I'm thinking about, I gotta text her parents, make sure they know we're in the States, blah, blah, blah.
But then at that point, it's like, it gets to a couple hours, you're like, well, we've just missed our next flight.
Well, yeah, I mean, at first it's like 15 minutes and I'm starting to get annoyed with like the officer that's there. It's been like, hey, how long does this normally take? And he's like, he gets serious with me. He's like, you can't wait here. You need to leave customs. Like you need to exit customs. I was like, what? No, a guy over there told me I could wait here. And so then we kind of do a back and forth. And then I realized that needs to stop. So I'm like, okay, I'll wait outside the customs area. And as soon as you get outside of customs, you realize, oh shit, I'm in the airport. And it has nothing to do with customs. You can't get back in here. And so then I'm badgering like every security guard I can find. And finally, this one guy talks to me because no one had answers. Finally, this guy talks to me and he's like, what you need to do is you need to call Port Authority. So I'm Googling Port Authority and calling them and saying, hey, I need to get into contact with customs. And I make this call probably 4 or 5 times. And finally, this lady gets annoyed enough with me to say, hey, I'll get a message to customs, because what I needed to do to know was what was happening, like, was she okay? And do I need to change our next flight? Because we have a connection to make. And so I have to make decisions. And
it's right. And they're going to pay for our flight too, right?
Like, yeah,
exactly.
And an hour or two go by, I know we're not going to make this flight. So I'm trying to buy another flight in the meantime, or at least get set up with a new flight. Do that for one later in the evening. And then things just kind of go nowhere. I mean, I still am not getting any information. Talking to her parents, letting them know, hey, Carla's now in customs jail for 3-4 hours. And it's like the middle of the night for them. And
Carla, what were your cellmates like?
They were great.
They're cool.
Yeah.
Did you get the orange pill there with you?
Sorry?
Were there other people in there? You went to like jail or you were...
Well, it looked like jail because you're not allowed to communicate with the outside whatsoever.
There's a room.
Like, it's a waiting room, basically. And they have people come in there that they question. But most people were getting questioned like right away. and they would ask them a couple questions and then they will be let go. But I don't know, for some reason, they kept me waiting there for 3 hours. And I saw people from all parts of the world. Like, I saw a bunch of, I think they were Mexican, because I remember a couple of them were in our flight. And they just went through very easily, like that. And then, yeah, there were just a few of us that were there. By like, it was 1 a.m. And there were, I think, 5 of us. And some of them had been waiting already for like 8-6 hours. They had already been questioned. So they were like, okay, yeah, I already know that I'm going back home. And they were just waiting to be booked on a flight back to their country. And there was a lot of waiting. I didn't talk to anyone at first because I was just like still processing everything after they told me that, yeah, you're flying back. And then they brought out the like a meal for us, and it's just like not even cup of noodles, it's just the I forget what it was. I think it was just rice in a little.
You're used to that, right? You've been stacking sats, living on
nothing, right? You're not sitting on the walls here.
Used to steak and eggs. That's what big winners.
Oh, yeah.
But they brought out the like little makeshift beds for us, and there were five. There were five of us sleeping in the same room. The lights never went off, and the desk with the people working there from immigration, they were just right behind us. So they were still taking calls throughout the night and chatting between them. And so three men and one woman came in later on. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty crazy. And did you have access to like your luggage or any kind of like toiletries or anything like that? No, that's crazy. Yeah. It's so weird, right? Like how come they don't tell you when you book the flight that there might be an issue? If that's because you come there and they immediately just look at your passport and it's like, oh, now we have questions. I mean, was there any like new kind of information? It seems so random. What do you think is the reason behind it? Is it like a policy like to scare immigrants from coming in, or is there just, I don't know, what is it?
We have two different opinions on this.
I mean, I think they do it on purpose. They're just trying to get people.
But from a passport standpoint, they know you're coming in, they're going to scan your passport.
Yeah.
Flag.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think mine got flagged previously, somehow, for some reason. I never really got, like, the previous time, actually, because I went to the States in 21, and then at the very beginning of 22, and then mid 22 again.
With a European passport, you can be in the United States. You have like, what, 90 days, right? I know American passport works for 90 days in Europe. I don't know how it works the other way, but I imagine it's similar.
Yeah, it's 90 days.
Yeah.
And so previous time we went through Texas, and it was the easiest entry.
The dude hardly looked at us.
Yeah, he just kind of welcome to the country. That's it. That's all it was. No questions whatsoever. And then you go through Seattle and then everything gets ruined. And so basically halfway through the night after they canceled my ESTA, I think they called you. You called and you found out finally that they were sending me back. And so he had to book a flight to be with me on the way back to Cancun. But then like a few hours later, they apparently the flight got overbooked, and so they took me out of that flight and they put me in a different flight Cabo, and they didn't tell him, and so he had to like keep checking with them.
So you fly to Cancun, Blake, and then Carly, you flew to Cabo. Yeah. Cabo.
Well, that's what they were trying to do to us. I think they purposely did this.
Yeah.
So I've been calling, pestering them, because I was like, hey, I will leave you guys alone if you can tell me two things. I need to know, make sure that she's okay. And two, what flight is she getting on? Because I had heard on a previous call that she'd been denied. So I knew she was going to get sent back. What does that mean? I don't know. I have no clue what that means.
Yeah.
What does sent back mean? And yeah. So I need to know that she's good. Because as long as she knew, like she knew, I needed a message to get to her that she knew this. So
they still didn't let you get your phone. Like, when did they give you your phone back?
Not okay. That was yeah. So later on. So I finally called her and figure out what flight it is, what she's getting on. So I booked that flight. It's for like 8 a.m. I sleep in the airport, wake up, and they've gotten like real feisty with me on when I was calling them. And so I was like, all right, I'm done talking, guys. I'll just see her on the flight. We'll figure everything out afterwards. And then early in the morning, I get to the flight 3 hours early, and I find the agent that's going to be working the flight. And I was like, hey, lady, you need to do me a favor. I need to make sure that Carla Pimenta is on this flight, right?
Yes.
And she's like, I can't do that. Like, I can't tell you that because I'm not her spouse. And so she's like, I can't do that unless you're family. I was like, lady, had a very long night. Cousins has been complete dicks. They won't tell me anything. I need you to look this up because I have to know that she's on this flight. And sure enough, in the middle of the night, they switched her flight, which on the phone with them, they had told me she can only fly back to the city that she came from. And we just went from Cancun. There is no other way. You can only go back to that city. And then in the middle of the night, they changed it to Cabo. So I find this out a couple hours before the flight. And now the flight's not at 8 a.m, it's at 10. And so I'm like, geez.
They had to book another flight. Like you've just, third flight.
Book another flight.
Yes.
Yeah. Book another flight. Oh. Make it to that flight. I'm still texting her parents like, I hope she's going to make it. Because it's now like 20 minutes before boarding. And I'm like, hopefully. And then sure enough, two police officers are escorting her onto the flight.
You got handcuffs on at this point?
No handcuffs, yeah. But they're walking with her as if like they're taking a fugitive onto the flight. Like it was crazy.
An orange jumpsuit and stuff.
Fucking garbage.
They were afraid that I was gonna run away at some point. But the crazy part is that they gave me my phone after we started walking towards the gate. So only at that point did I finally get my possessions, including my luggage. And I didn't get my passport until we went 10,000 feet in the air. Because my passport in a manila envelope, and they gave it to a flight attendant and told her to give it to me only.
Because she's an authority now on international movements.
Wow. And this is over what, like a couple of $1,000, if that, like, you know?
No, it was like $400.
$400.
It's like, I can understand the system. It's like, we need to know who's coming in and out, blah, blah, blah. But it's like
$400.
There's a filter and there's no qualifying mechanisms to pop people that shouldn't be in that filter out. It's just the biggest waste of money, scam, bullshit. And it's like, whoa, like, I had no idea. It was, I've never experienced anything like this.
And this is where American tax dollars are going for, is to
this
keep,
is where it's going.
Keep the fugitives like Carla, who are making $400 illegally
across
the United States. And all while you got all this other legal activity going on, you have all these banking cartels doing everything they're doing.
Not even a U.S. employee. She's an independent contractor that submitted her work.
Actually submitted it.
Yeah, exactly.
Freaking garbage. So that's where we differ. I think the agent just picked someone. He targeted her and then asked her a few questions. If he sees any sign that if he wants to see it or not, that she should get a secondary check, he flagged it. And at that point, the customs agents are on a mission to talk to you through the night. Now she's in there for 4 or 5 hours, exhausted. And they're going to just keep asking you questions until they have something that they can get you on. And she's just trying to be honest. Like, she's just trying to be like, do the right thing.
Because they put you in a position where you don't know whether they're going to check absolutely everything or not.
Yeah.
And so at the very beginning, I had a very minimal approach to, I'm just going to say very bare minimum. Not going to give you details whatsoever. But then the questions get more intense and deeper. And so I was like, okay, these guys are actually going to check everything, so I should probably be a little bit more honest and give them a little more just to show them, hey, I'm cooperative, I'm not hiding anything. It's just eventually I just had to come out and mention that, and yeah, it's just
it's pretty crazy, right? Like they
go ahead.
Now I was going to ask, at some point they just confiscate your phone, so that's
they did it right away.
That was the crazy part, and I replay it all the time in my mind. I'm like, why wasn't I like asking, like stopping them from doing that right at the first moment?
Yeah.
But it's like they already have your passport. They ask for your phone. So she's like, he's like, he immediately says you're doing a secondary check. He's putting the passport in this little sealed thing. He's like, I need your phone as well. And we're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and it just happened so fast, and I regret that moment so much because it's like, what the fuck? Like, we should have been like, what are our rights right here? But it happened so quickly that like it was.
And they can get into your phone, right? I said they get into your phone as well.
I don't know. I mean,
you're gonna change the password, so.
Yeah. I don't think they did.
Okay.
But
because you know those television shows, I sometimes like a guilty pleasure, but Australia has one of those television shows,
yes,
you know, where they do the custom. And
yeah,
a lot of times they'll open up the phone and they'll go through all the WhatsApp messages and like complete history conversations and your like DMs and different applications and stuff. So I was wondering if they were doing that too.
I was a little bit concerned.
Of course.
You never know, like if you have an iPhone, maybe the government has some deal with Apple to they can look up your phone and unlock it remotely. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe that's some conspiracy there, but I would imagine that's a capability.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
So now you guys are in Mexico.
I'm in Mexico.
Yes. The government.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot freer. Apparently, it's a lot freer in Mexico than is the United States, is what it's seeming like.
Yes, for sure. I mean, at least over the past 3 years, it's been a little bit more lax compared to the rest of the world, which is part of the reason why I came here during COVID. I was in Europe when the lockdowns happened. And after a few months of being unable to do absolutely anything because I wasn't around my friends. I was staying with my parents at the time, who I love, but you know, if you don't have social interactions with people your age, eventually it gets to you.
Yes.
And I couldn't go to the gym. I couldn't do absolutely anything because everything was closed and the weather was terrible. And so I was like, I need to get out of here. And then I heard that Mexico was open and that people were celebrating New Year's here. I was like, I'm booking my one-way ticket. And I did. And yeah, I've been in Mexico ever since. It's been like 2 years now. And yeah, honestly, life is so much easier here. Everything might not be done by the book, but
maybe not as efficient in all areas.
Yeah.
Things are not perfect, just like in any other.
But that's what comes with free. It's interesting, right? Because you know, when we think about freedom as Bitcoiners, I think about that a lot. Is sometimes, you know, obviously in like centrally planned things, like if there's not as much freedom, or if you rely more on a government, there's more convenience to it, and that's what people do. Is they'll end up sacrificing freedoms for convenience. But if you really want true freedom, then that does mean that you're going to have a little bit more personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. There is going to be some convenience that you sacrifice for that freedom, but in the long run, it's going to be worth it because you actually have freedom, but you are giving up some conveniences in that when you do that.
Yeah, man. So it's like why Bitcoin and Bitcoiners are flowing to more developing nations.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're like, if you want to call them Bitcoin experiments, like where these circular economies starting up, it's because they're smaller, more nimble, and there's not less regulation, and these things can start working. And that's one of the cool things being a Bitcoiner is like, it takes you to those types of places. And you're exactly right. Like with freedom, requires more responsibility. And I mean, once you realize that, you kind of see things completely differently.
Yeah.
Nowadays,
I'm going to start seeing more people migrating to Central American countries or up until recently, a lot of people were migrating to Southeast Asia as well, mainly because of the cost of living as well. Because, I mean, if you're working in the US or say like Europe and you're earning a decent salary, in the US nowadays, like 100K a month doesn't
a year.
I'm like 100K a month. I might get the job.
Oh, Bitcoin, baby.
Yeah. I mean, where you, unless you're in San Francisco or New York, 100K a month, I might get it done. Yeah.
This inflation thing is getting out of hand.
Yeah. Like, Jesus.
You get what I mean.
Yeah.
Money nowadays doesn't get you far. And so a lot of people are finding that moving to a place where the lower cost of living is just more convenient. And now if you're living in a community where there you can even use your Bitcoin, it's even more convenient.
You said that, Marcus, on a podcast the other day or recently. You're like, I think you're living in, or you're at least in Medellin. It's like, yeah, you want to live somewhere with a lower cost of living so I can stack sats. Like, it makes it more affordable, easier, better. It's like,
My story is a little bit similar in that sense. I haven't been traveling for as long as you have, Carla, but we left last year summer, and we moved. First, we went to the Caribbean. Now we're in Medellin. And like you said, you know, it's exactly what you just mentioned. It's maybe a little bit less organized, but on the other hand, it's a very modern city, very low cost of living, lots of freedom, you know. There's actually a lot more personal interaction too. It seems like developing countries are just more friendly towards each other than in all these places like New York or Amsterdam, in my case, where people are so stuck in that rat race and everybody just, you know, elbowing each other to the side, trying to climb it to the top or whatever. I mean, I am exaggerating a little bit, but that climate really is there, and here you just feel it less. And yeah, in about 2 weeks, we're going to check out Costa Rica. I'd really love to see that. We've been to Panama. Love Panama as well. I could definitely live there as well. Mm-hmm. I also want, it's like a giant buffet, you know, like there's so many great countries here in Latin America. I want to like see them all, but there's limited resources, you know, air market. So, but I'm also planning to check out Southeast Asia as well. Maybe not so much to live there. Maybe I'll change my mind if I'm there.
Yeah.
But I think I think Latin America is like closer to like I grew up in the Caribbean, so it all feels pretty familiar over here to some extent. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I actually used to live in the Netherlands. I went to college there, and I have friends, who ended up moving.
Maybe you guys went to the same college.
I doubt it.
There's not a lot of them, but what was I gonna say? A bunch of my friends from there, they moved abroad. The majority of them are not living in the Netherlands anymore. Some of them are in South Africa. Some of them are in a couple of them are in Southeast Asia or Asia, and some of them are in other parts of Europe. A couple of them came to Central America as well. So
how many languages do you speak, Carla? Do you speak Dutch?
I was just gonna ask her if she speaks Dutch.
Yeah.
In Beijing, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you will climb Beijing out there, right?
Sean knows a little bit of Dutch too. Tell him, Sean.
Yeah, no. I know.
Come on, yes, do it. For the Dutch viewers, for the two Dutch viewers that we have.
Okay, this is for Ghost of Limburg.
Are you one of those viewers?
Nelken the Gauken.
Okay.
I always say it wrong. Do you know what that means?
Say it again.
Nelken and the Gauken.
Nelken and the Gauken.
We'll tell you guys after, because it's a little too much. We got that for the kids who watch, because we have a lot of kids fans, you know, a lot of kids who
your target audience.
Future Bitcoiners, there's a lot of kids that watch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit above that, you know. We got to make sure we can hit okay for kids on the when we post it to YouTube. So that's actually, okay, we say not, we actually, it's not, we don't do it for kids. So,
no.
I'm thinking about it. It says not okay for kids.
For the record.
Yeah.
When I moved to the Netherlands, I actually went to a Dutch school that was specifically designed for foreigners, foreign kids that had just moved into the country.
It's like Erasmus or something, or no?
No. It was just a normal Dutch school, but they accepted a lot of foreigners. And so they had a special class, a Dutch class, for kids where they would teach you the language, and then you would go and study math, history, and everything in Dutch. But it was very, very easy. So I did that for, I think it was a month and a half. And then I just, like, no offense, but I didn't think that I was going to end up using Dutch because I didn't want to stay in the country long term anyway. I already knew that. and it's quite a complicated language too. And so I was getting the gist of it, but a month and a half afterwards, with my family, we decided that an international school would be better for me. And so,
yeah, I think it's a good decision. I mean, I'm learning Spanish now, and there's like whole continents that speak Spanish, right? So yeah, it makes a lot of sense to learn Spanish. I mean, Holland, most people can't even find it on a map. That's how small it is, you know? So
yeah.
why bother learning Dutch? I completely agree.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at least I wanted to learn the basics, and I did. But yeah. And wow. So, yeah. But so to answer your first question, I'd say four languages. So Spanish, Italian, English, and French.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Blake, do you speak any
English? I just got English, right? I'm holding that down.
Hey.
I'm learning Spanish.
Spanish. You're learning Spanish?
American and British.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Australian.
Australia.
Okay.
I really noticed you guys like on Twitter these last couple of months, because all of a sudden, I mean, we've been following each other for a while now, and but you guys have been like posting a lot of cool stuff coming out of Guatemala. I mean, I don't know how much time we have left, Sean, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about like what you guys like, first of all, like we always love a little backstory, right? Like when was like the first time you ignored Bitcoin, and I'd love to hear the Guatemala story or anything you guys like to share on that part, because it's,
about your Guatemala trip first, right?
Yeah.
Just there. What happened with, like, was that, do you guys always go to Bitcoin Lake? You're just right there in Mexico, or how did that happen?
Well, it's slight background. When we first met, I visited her in Mexico. We immediately went to El Salvador. This is not long for adopting Bitcoin. Not long after they made it legal tender, just because we wanted to see what that was all about.
Meet on Twitter? Is that how'd you guys meet?
Yeah, we met on Twitter.
Bet on Bitcoin Twitter.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
All right. When was the first time you ignored Carla?
Blake has game right here. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It was. We became friends through DMs, and then we met at Bitblock Boom. We both were going to that conference and came very close, and knew she was going back to Mexico and I wanted to visit. And so things just started happening very quickly. And been dating ever since.
We went to
El Salvador, got really inspired by that. Mm-hmm. And we're like, wow, it's one thing to know it's legal tender. It's one thing to know that cool things are happening there, but to see it, to feel it, to see how it's actually bringing value to people's lives and actually doing real world things. And so we're super inspired by that. And
it's different, right? When you see it in real
life. Completely.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I want to do that's why we're doing the having party in El Salvador.
Yeah, which is going to be so sick.
It's a
good idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we got
it's
really.
It's an obvious idea. It's not a good idea. It's an obvious idea.
Yeah.
It's an obvious idea.
Rational.
Yes.
Like I said, it was inspired by that. Now we just really want to go see where these communities are popping up, and we've heard a lot about Bitcoin Lake, and she was really pushing for it, and so we decided to go. And it's Lake Atitlan in Guatemala. And
nice accent.
Thanks.
Right? Yeah.
And we really didn't know a whole lot, to be honest. We knew a few of the community leaders and a guy named Patrick who started it, And it's all been, you quickly find out it's all completely grassroots, completely led by a couple people. And you get into the city and then you start seeing Bitcoin signs, like accepting Bitcoin. And it's like, whoa, okay, this is more than we expected. This is cool. And we started talking to business merchants in the area. And then talking to our host, like this guy named Eliza, another guy named Rudy, that are locals and who are kind of pushing the movement, and hearing more about this last year and how much progress they've made. And it's just, it was just like, wow, okay, this is a real Bitcoiner place. And it reminded us a lot about going to El Salvador, because obviously it's not working perfect. It's new. There's hiccups, there's little issues. They may not understand it completely, but it's a tool for them. It's a real solution for them. And it's only been a year and they have 70 businesses in that area that are accepting Bitcoin. And we went around getting coffee, you can do laundry, you can ride the tuk-tuk, you can get food all in Bitcoin. And it's just really, it has all the bones of a really special Bitcoin area. And
what's driving that, Blake? Are there a lot of people there that want to spend Bitcoin? Because I mean, one of the challenges is always that, like, now you have all these companies that you got to convince to put up, like, we accept Bitcoin. But then if there's nobody coming there to pay with Bitcoin, then, you know, after a couple of months, they take the sign back down and they're like, well, you know, or are there really, is there Bitcoin being spent there?
Yeah, I mean, we did ask to every merchant if they had customers paying in Bitcoin, and they said, yeah, we do. We, at the very beginning, we had a lot. And then towards the end of last year, it slowed down a little bit, and they all guessed that it was because of the price, and
yes,
people were stacking more than they were spending. But a couple of them said that now it's kind of picking up again. So, and I think
the numbers are crazy. Like,
yeah.
Rudy, who did some analysis, who's the like professor of the like little Bitcoin class that's running there now. He did some numbers and he's working on putting like a real article together. But just it's mainly Bitcoin Beach Wallet that's set up there.
Which is a great wallet, by the way.
It's a fantastic wallet. It's fantastic. Yeah.
It's much better than Chivo. Chivo's not that great of a wallet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, Bitcoin Beach Wallet has bigger plans. They're gonna go real big soon, I think, because it's just a solid wallet. But like, this is just
inside scoop on that, but we won't make you give it up right now.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's mainly Bitcoin Beach Wallet except there, because that's how they were orange billed and they have a phone, and so there's no like official POS system there. It's just on phones. And mouth to mouth, or word of mouth, not mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Word of mouth. Word of mouth.
You learned too much Spanish that you forgot. You forgot the idioms.
You're right.
That happens sometimes.
It does actually.
Do they use? They don't use the dollar. They use what, the quetzal in Guatemala?
Yeah.
How does that work? Are they able to, in the Bitcoin Beach Wallet, can they toggle back and forth, or like you can in, you know, like in Strike or something like that, where you can kind of go, I guess you have to sell it really, but does it show balance in quetzales? I guess that's how you would say it. Or,
I think it's in dollars.
It's in dollars.
Dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is another app that we only saw one merchant using in San Marcos, which is a different town around the lake, because Bitcoin Lake it's in reference to Lake Atitlan, but in particular to one of the towns, the largest one, that's called Panajachel. Mm-hmm. And there's another one that's very touristy, it's like a 20-minute boat ride away from it. It's called San Marcos, it's a very tiny hippie town. And we went there too, and there's like three merchants currently accepting Bitcoin. And one of these guys, he used to walk to working Wall Street, I think he said that.
Mm-hmm.
And he accepts Bitcoin, but through this other app that allows you to put in the amount in quetzales, and then it generates a QR code where you send your Bitcoin and he gets it in quetzales. So he doesn't actually get Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And he prefers it.
He uses the Lightning Network, basically.
Yeah. He's the network user.
Yeah. So better than nothing. But yeah, like you could tell that he wasn't interested in actually holding Bitcoin.
That doesn't. Honestly, that still leads to Bitcoin adoption.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. It's like the people that say, I don't want to spend my Bitcoin. It's like, that's fair. I completely agree with that. But it's like, well, then you can still transact.
Yeah.
You can still use the network.
You can, yeah, you can use dollars,
yeah,
dollars over the Lightning Network and then show up as dollars in someone else's end or show up
instantaneously.
Yeah. That's like when you're.
It's a mind. It's crazy.
Yes.
And with no fees.
Yes.
Exactly.
Instead of those banking fees that are 3%, you know, that's
and which is
in Bitcoin Lake, it's even worse. The minimum that you're gonna pay in banking fees is, and transaction fees, it's 5% with credit card.
Obviously 10.
So
the merchants are just saying we gotta charge an extra 10% on a credit card because we're trying to cover these fees. And so they just automatically go to 10%.
Yeah,
and it's like
it's
if you accept Bitcoin, I can give it to you for nothing, you know, and no fees, exact exchange rate.
Yeah.
I mean, travelers, every traveler knows this, right? Like the convenience of, you know, like one world currency, if it sat, you know, would be so much easier, right? I mean, every time these banks are horrible, every time you go to an ATM, they'll charge you like 5 to 10%. So you're like, okay, well, let me make sure that I get enough cash that I don't have to come back to this ATM. They're like, oh no, sorry, maximum amount is like $200. So you have to come back in like a couple of days and do it again because
Dude, I remember when I went to England and I took out pounds. I was just like, it was like I got a fee from my bank and then I got a fee from the ATM and it was international fee. I was like, just to take out pounds. Mm-hmm. And then I took out too many, like what you're saying. So then I had to go exchange them back for euros. And then I get raked by the exchange.
It hit there.
This is insane, right?
We were just talking about this yesterday. It's like every traveler has like stranded fiat, like in a pile, in a drawer somewhere of a couple coins, couple paper bills, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's such a waste. And again, it's taking up space. You're never going to use it again. And you can't, if it's small enough, you can't exchange it. And so we were talking about like how what you could do as a traveler, especially in Pana, which is where we just were, where there's still mainly cash. Obviously, it's going to take time for them to be more on a Bitcoin standard. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you had like $5, like in dollars, held in quetzales, before you go to the airport, you could walk into a merchant who needs that paper bill and be like, hey, I'll trade you right now. I'll give you this $5 and you can send me Bitcoin. It's free. You can just trade this and I can get rid of it. And it helps. It's a mutually beneficial relationship because then I don't have the stranded fiat. And then the business has the small bill of cash that they need.
That is an amazing idea. And it's already being done in El Salvador. Like if you think about that, like, I remember when I was in El Salvador last, there's Bitcoin ATMs in the airport. So you can literally, and it works both ways. You can get dollars or you can get Bitcoin out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice. And there's even this one little machine that this guy made at Mi Primer Bitcoin in San Salvador where you could put in coins. Because the dollar coin, the dollar is a coin in El Salvador. It's not a dollar bill, you know?
Yeah.
So the dollar, you can put a dollar coin or you can put change in his little box and then it generates a QR code and then you can get that and it sends you sats. So it's just like
we have one of those here in Medellin as well. There's this crypto bar and it has that Bitcoin coin machine where you can literally just throw in like your loose change and it sends you just the worth of it back in sats to your phone. So it's
when are you gonna orange pill that guy at that crypto bar, Marcus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think, you know, it's a bit of a lost cause, I believe. You know? With time, he'll get there. He'll get there.
Yeah, if he gets rough.
My Spanish isn't that good enough to put in the work. Yeah.
Find a translator. That's an option.
But back to Pana, it's like that community is starting to get, like, they're starting to say, we had a Bitcoin meetup and like a couple like business owners came and that was really neat because they started learning and it's not just this thing that travelers are demanding. or this thing that has a price that goes up and down. You know, it's like they really are starting to see it as a tool. And it's like, wow, Bitcoin just finds its way into these areas because it makes sense. It's super practical.
Yeah, it was beautiful to be at the meetup and actually blow some people's minds by showing them how Lightning works. Because there was this one guy, he knew about Bitcoin, and he already has Bitcoin, but he's bought it. I don't know exactly how he bought it, but he said he has some Bitcoin. And he wanted to get his son, a 16-year-old, to buy Bitcoin. And we were just talking about the ATM that they have in a different town. And he was like, so does he have to be of age, like 18, to be able to use the ATM and to own Bitcoin? I'm like, no, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Anyone can own Bitcoin.
Does that discriminate?
Exactly. And
yeah. It's not like opening a bank account, right? You don't have to bring your ID. That's what's nice.
And you don't have to qualify. Lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with then, Lightning, you can just get a Lightning wallet and boom, there you go.
And that's exactly what we did. Your we helped them set up a Bitcoin Beach wallet because that's the most popular wallet in town. And we sent him $2 and then we had him send back a dollar. Like instantaneously, he was like, wait, what?
But yeah, when he saw us.
What? Yeah.
It came through and a dollar like pops up on his phone or the $2. And he was like,
yeah.
And you can just see the lights turning on. It's like such a cool thing to
yeah. Witness. And he said he's gonna get his son too.
What it does is it just makes us free to transact. Yeah. Right? Like it gives us the ability where you don't have to rely on banks or some old dude in some building in some institution who can tell you how you can transact, where you can transact, and what currency. It's like, no, I can have control over all of this and I don't need to rely on anyone else. And I think that's like the coolest part about it. The banks are so screwed, honestly.
They're so screwed. They don't even know how screwed.
The whole financial system is kind of screwed. Like it's already built. Everything's built already. And there's so many people across the world who grabbed the idea of what Bitcoin is.
Yeah,
I just don't. Yeah.
That's where we're like, our kind of idea behind this traveling is like, obviously Bitcoin is inevitable.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. But adoption is not inevitable. At least spreading it into more hands.
Yes.
And so our mission is informing the public of that Bitcoin brings liberty to your area. It brings more liberty to you. It brings freedom. And it's just, we just got to witness that again. It's just an incredible thing.
Yeah, I mean, there were everywhere we went around that town and in other towns as well, we would ask merchants if they accepted Bitcoin. And whenever they would say no, we said, well, you should. In the future, yeah, but you should. And these were these are the reasons why. And oftentimes, the majority of them, they would always say, yeah, but don't I need to set up a bank account to have Bitcoin? I'm like, no. No, you don't. That was the perfect setup for us to start orange pilling them.
Yeah.
There was this one guy who was the owner of a spa, and he was very open, very interested in Bitcoin. He just didn't know anything about it. And he mentioned that he had seen a few merchants around town accepting Bitcoin. And he also mentioned that, yeah, I don't have a bank account. I'm like, that's why you need Bitcoin. And he's like, yeah, but so it's only businesses that can have it, right? Like I can't have it personally. And I was like, no, 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 you can. Like anyone can have Bitcoin, anyone. And so it was.
We met the youngest toddler we've ever met.
We did. Yeah.
What'd you say?
We met the youngest toddler we've ever met to date. We were on a boat going to another town, cruising around the lake because there's always little towns that you should try to visit all of them because they're all cool and unique. And I had like a Bitcoin hat on. And this guy goes, hey, I like your hat. And it started a conversation. I was like, oh, you're a Bitcoiner? And he had three little children with him. And he's like, yeah, I'm here for a wedding. It's like a big group of families here. And I've been trying to orange pill them. I've been trying to orange pill everyone. And the cool thing was that he didn't even know how much Bitcoin activity was happening in Canada. I don't know where he was staying exactly.
Yeah.
But part of this great conversation where it's like, oh no, you should go be using Bitcoin in Banner right now. And then he was telling us like how he's got a wallet for each one of his little kids. And he's got a 5-month-old that has a Bitcoin wallet, is full on hodling, hasn't sold a cent.
Well, the 5-month-old, he better not be selling.
Yeah, exactly.
So cool. So
buying some diapers for himself.
All right, but like, don't you guys ever run just to take like a little pushback a little bit? Because what I notice a lot of times is like, you know, at least here in Colombia, when I tell them about Bitcoin, a lot of people also respond to like, no, I prefer like the dollar, you know, I like to have money. You know, they just don't know anything about Bitcoin. And then some people are more receptive than others. And then, you know, I tell them about Bitcoin and why it's good, you know, and why like fiat is bad. And I try to get people to trigger them with some, you know, to get them to do some research, because there's always like limited time and there's like, oh my God, where do I start to get them to see the entire picture, you know? And if I like, one problem is always like, okay, so how do I get it? Yeah, you have to install this app. And then they're looking at me like, okay, is this like a scam? You know, what app are you making me download? Right? So that's like they have to trust you with that already. And then if you send them, I, you know, like I usually don't send them more than like a dollar or maybe two, you know, just to give them the idea, because now you got to tell them, how do you back up your wallet, right? And like, they have to understand the whole concept of a wallet. So there's so much challenges there in explaining people Bitcoin that it's like, sometimes it's very hard as well. And it's like, yeah, you can tell people to buy Bitcoin, but I've kind of like shifted more towards like telling people like, you really got to study this because it's, you know, it's that important. But
yeah, I mean, it's about taking personal responsibility owning Bitcoin, personal financial responsibility. So it's not up to us to tell them exactly like every single step of the process. It's up to them to be open to learning and actually doing their research and learning how it works for themselves. Which is, we can definitely push in one direction though.
And I mean, orange pilling is like there's no definition to being orange pilled. It's like, I feel like I'm more orange pilled today than yesterday. You know, like if I look back 3 months ago, I'm like, oh, I wasn't even bullish as much as I am today. It's like, I learn more about Bitcoin every day. So there's levels to like being orange pilled. And one of the things that luckily she's with me because she speaks Spanish, and it's difficult because I want to contribute to these conversations, but she's leaving and she's a phenomenal job. But like an important thing is telling them, like, asking them, do you accept Bitcoin? No. Are you planning to accept Bitcoin in the future? Maybe. I've heard about it. I've seen the sign, blah, blah, blah. And then you just ask, you know, is there a reason? And then you just really pay attention to what their reason why they're not, or why they're hesitant. And then you just, you handle that objection. They have an objection, you handle it. Because as Bitcoiners, we have an answer to all these little problems that they have. But you just have to be open and explain and realize that it's not going to happen overnight. You just have to trick them into opening up a little more. And then, like what we were doing when we were going around to these businesses that don't accept Bitcoin yet, is we would handle those little objections, and then we'd pass it off to the community leader in Pana, who was going to reach out to them and be like, hey, do you want to learn more? And then if the education process starts, and I don't know how long that normally takes, but it's a process. And so it's just, it works really well for travelers, because travelers want to spend in Bitcoin, or at least they want to transact into it. And if the businesses hear that enough, then they're like, oh, well, how am I going to make money if they're wanting to spend Bitcoin? How am I going to keep my business alive? It's like, they're smart enough to get that, you know? And it's happening.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And were you guys finding like the businesses through the Bitcoin Beach or wallet? I know they have like a map that shows like what businesses accept Bitcoin. I know there's also like the btcmap.org or any other resources.
Both. I started using btcmap at first, and then I noticed that it didn't have a lot of spots, and so I went to check on Bitcoin Beach wallet, and I saw many more businesses, and so eventually we ended up just using that one. And
it was accurate.
Yeah,
it was accurate. And if it wasn't accurate, it wasn't accurate that it like wasn't the right pin, or that it's not, they didn't accept Bitcoin. It's that like the decision maker of the business wasn't around at the time, and they only have it on their phone. And so like one of the issues, like you're going to get a coffee, and this didn't happen for a coffee, but like we wanted to buy a magnet from this lady in a like a little market that's in the middle of this whole scene of like, you know, a typical market. It's kind of chaos. And we go back and there, we want to buy a magnet. And she's like, yeah, I accept accept Bitcoin, but her husband had the phone that accepted Bitcoin. And so, like, you run into little issues like that, but they do accept Bitcoin and they have a sign, but it's just that, you know, they're not prepared for all situations.
You know, it's interesting, right? So when I'm back in the United States, I normally stay in Salt Lake City. And there's this curry chicken spot that accepts Bitcoin out there in Salt Lake City, which is cool. And like the Salt Lake City meetup, sometimes we'll go over there and we'll, you know, eat and then pay in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Love it.
And so the guy who runs the place, I don't know how orange pill he is, but he's open to Bitcoin, right? And so what they used is Ibex Mercado. And with Ibex Mercado, so the owner wasn't even there the first time that we showed up. He wasn't there, and we still all paid in Bitcoin, because what Ibex does is they put this QR code down, and whoever is working, or even me, like I could have scanned the QR code, it pops up, and then I just type in the phone, okay, how much are we charging? And then from someone else's phone, then I just pay it, and it doesn't go to me. It goes to the company's, you know, whatever it goes to, right? I don't know. I'm a basketball player, so I'm not as technical. But but I know it goes to the business.
I feel you, bro.
It doesn't go to me. And so that's what's really cool, too, about something like Ibex Mercado. But I think, I'm not sure if you have to balance channels, lightning channels or not. I'm not sure with all that. But that could be a future solution, right? Even for something like a Bitcoin Beach wallet is, hey, how can we make this available? So there's just a QR code on that, like right next to the cash register. And then that way,
to be honest, right now it's possible to get those static lightning addresses.
Yeah,
so you know, yes. I remember a couple of years ago, those weren't available yet. That was really difficult. So
yeah,
I mean, yeah.
So I guess that solves now too.
Yeah, you got QR codes. Like we would, when in Portland at the meetup there, we went to like some food trucks, and for like Bitcoin evenings there, they just had LN URLs for each, like the three options of the meals they had, and you would just scan one and they would already have the amount, and that URL was like an invoice for everyone instead of like a unique invoice at the time. And so it's a nice trick for in some situations. It can create confusion for people that are using certain wallets and they don't work with a static QR code. And it can create little hiccups, but like it is a great solution. I love that idea of like, we're all a group of guys sitting or girls sitting at a table. I go over and scan the QR code. I always take a picture of it, and then people just start paying all their amounts. It's like it naturally splits up the bill the correct way. It's like, that's dope.
Yeah, and I think the what you mentioned, Sean, about the Ibex Mercado. I think the Bitcoin Lake or Lake Bitcoin app that they use in some places, like that guy from Wall Street that accepted Bitcoin, he accepted Quetzales.
Yeah.
I think it works the same way because Eliza was explaining it to us that the app allows you to create a little QR code that like an employee can scan it. Put up the amount that you owe them for the meal, so $10, but in Quetzales, and then you can scan it, and the employee doesn't get the money. The money goes to the wallet of the company.
The company, yeah, exactly.
Pretty much the same, I think.
Yeah.
But I think that app is not very old. It was developed by the Swiss guy that went and set up shop for 3 months there with the girlfriend.
He was just vacationing. He's like, oh, I should build a wall here.
Yeah.
It's kind of like saying nothing. I always heard about him.
Yeah. We don't know who he is, but yeah, that was the only place where they use that
wallet.
Everywhere else, it was BTC wallet and Beach wallet. And we did see one restaurant where they have a POS system generates a QR code. Mm. I think it's the only place in town, and it was very new, so the guy already knew how to use it. And the funny part was that we asked if he accepted tips, and he was like, yeah, but I'll accept it with my wallet. And so he got his phone out, he typed in the number, and
yeah, exactly. Yeah, smart guy.
You understand Boo. Yeah.
Hey, yeah. I'm curious. Did you guys do any research into like Guatemala, like what their country's like laws or stances on crypto? Are they crypto friendly or do they tax crypto? Any kind of that kind of stuff? Or I don't know if you guys are like
crypto.
I'm just really
what's
curious.
You coming out of your mouth, Marcus? What's going on?
Yeah, speaking our language. No, I think we haven't done any
ready.
Sean is loving this right now.
So we haven't done enough research on that matter yet, but from the little bit that I've heard is that they don't have any regulations yet, and especially if you have foreign assets, for instance, you don't have to pay taxes on it. And since you can't really define where Bitcoin is big, like there's no base for Bitcoin, you can, you know, have it and not have to pay capital gains or anything. Like, so it doesn't get taxed.
Yeah,
No. So you guys obviously know Mexico pretty well by now. You've seen El Salvador, now you've seen like Guatemala a little bit. Like if you were to have to like advise, I mean, there's a lot of people in Europe, they're like considering it, right? And there are all kinds of reasons you don't do it. Either you have family there or you don't want to give up your job, or it's just scary because maybe you're thinking, you know, there's a language barrier, or I'm going to get a culture shock, or everybody has like tons of reasons. But if you guys were to have to be like, hey, we've known that area, you know, how would you measure them up against each other for expats to move to, yes or no?
I don't.
Is that doable?
Countries?
Yeah.
How would you be able to rank them? Like, is Mexico better than El Salvador? Is El Salvador better than Guatemala?
Tough question. I mean, just from a living standpoint, Mexico's best for sure. And like, as far as like it being just more industrialized, having more convenience, more, you know. As a traveler, if you're moving, especially if you have a family, you've got questions like, okay, schooling and hospitals, what are those, how are those for wherever I'm going? And so Mexico obviously has great, you can find good schools and there is solid hospitals.
And also when it comes to culture shock, I think Mexico, like moving to Mexico will be an easier transition for most people compared to moving to Guatemala or El Salvador, because those are more, they're still very attached to their culture, I feel, compared to the bigger cities in Mexico. Obviously, if you go in smaller towns in the north or in the south, obviously traditions and culture are much more highlighted, more accentuated, and very important for the locals. But if you're staying in a big city, it's like life is, it's easy. And so if you're coming from Europe or North America, moving here is pretty easy. In fact, we just made friends with some people in the building and just moved from, the guy's British and she's American, and they have a baby and two dogs and they moved here and, you know, they're having a great time. They like it. They don't feel unsafe. There are great schools around here, great hospitals, and there's lots of Americans living around here. So if culture is one of your biggest worries, as well as hospitals and the school system, then I'd say Mexico.
So there's that standpoint.
Yeah. But then
as Bitcoiners, I mean, El Salvador is legal tender. If you want to protect your Bitcoin and you want to not pay taxes and all those things, El Salvador is going to absolutely explode. I mean, we went there in 2021, we went there again in 2022, and the difference the country has made just in the Bitcoin world and just from talking to locals, like the progress they've made is insane. And it's like the amount of just capital and money moving there because money flows to where it's treated the best. It's obvious that El Salvador is going to be a great place to live.
It's getting more expensive nowadays.
It's getting more expensive. Fell in love with Guatemala. We really just fell in love. Obviously, we're coming off a mountaintop high of being in Guatemala, but like the climate was amazing. The lake is absolutely phenomenal. It's like It's already a tourist destination. It could use some infrastructure help for sure, and they're like working on building roads from the airport to Pana. But man, we really, really like Guadalajara. Guatemala. We live in Guadalajara.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy. Wow. It's like Central America is one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's and so many people don't even know about it. Like how green and tropical, and there's mountains, there's volcanoes, there's beaches. It's absolutely beautiful in Central America.
There's a lot of diversity.
Yes.
Diversity.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because we're trying to promote that idea, like mainly Bitcoin focused, but it's like that idea that it's a good idea to move to Central America, Latin America. The first thing, of course, is always, what's the crime like? Yeah, it's like, okay, I lived in Portland and she saw people like smoking crack and like beating in windows on the way to the store. Like everywhere has crime. You just can't be an idiot. You have to protect yourself. You have to have personal responsibility. And so it's like, it's funny because we're conditioned to fear these places. Mm-hmm. And it's sad because these places are absolutely gorgeous, really, really great people, family culture. And there's just so much to see and do. And so it's like, I wish people had less like fear right off the bat. Obviously you have to consider things, making a big move, it's a big decision, but these places are wonderful.
Yeah.
I agree completely. And it is somewhat deliberate, you know, like the way the media treats those countries, you know, they love to bring bad stories, just like what they love to do with Bitcoin. Yeah. You see that with Bitcoin too.
Yeah.
And that's what happens to those countries as well. And, you know, one of the things you said, like the diversity, what I love is like the diversity in climate as well. A lot of people don't realize that when you go to Central America, it's not always just like humid and 100 degrees or you know, for the Fahrenheit lovers, or 30 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. No, if you go up to these volcanoes or on these mountains, it's actually more like a spring-like temperature, which is perfect because you don't need airco, you don't need heating. You know, it's
the Bitcoin Lake is like that. They're higher up. I forget the altitude, but it's known as the town of the eternal spring because the weather is just beautiful throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And it's quite dry. So it's very different compared to down the coast where it's very tropical and super humid. Right. In Bitcoin Beach, I love it there, but the humidity.
Your hair is like this.
Yeah, you can't like walk 5 minutes or you're already like drenched in sweat.
you just gotta welcome the sweat when you're down there.
For sure. If you're gonna be at all comfortable, you just gotta accept it.
Getting that water, getting the ocean.
Yeah, true. Those sunburns.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's this region is highly, highly underestimated for sure.
Mm-hmm. So we're kind of getting close to finishing up, but I had a question. Do you guys run Hodling Apparel? Is that what you guys run?
Yes.
I didn't know. I wasn't sure if you guys ran that, if you guys were models for it. I was like,
we're going to be our own models.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what?
It's a new people operation. No, we just wanted to keep it low key at first. Like I didn't want to associate my name to it because I didn't, you know, Bitcoiners are a little bit particular sometimes and they can think like, oh, you're just a grifter or you're just trying to get money out of people.
There's a big difference between building and grifting and scamming, right? Like, and I think I think there needs to be a distinction made, especially on Bitcoin Twitter, where, we're like very aware of the grifters and the scammers that say like, buy my token. Like I like Bitcoin, buy my token, right?
Yeah.
But there are people out there who want I want Bitcoin clothes. I want like Bitcoin, I want Bitcoin stuff. Like, and I want to go to different things that, you know, I want to go to different meetups or different events and different things. So, you know, just because you're not a software developer doesn't mean that you can't build on Bitcoin, right? And now you're not building on actual Bitcoin, but you're building the idea of Bitcoin. And I think that distinction has to be made somehow. There's a difference between building and scamming. And to me, Bitcoin, like Hodling Apparel, it's Bitcoin only and it's cool clothing. So it's like, Like that sweatshirt. I think that sweatshirt is hodling apparel.
It's here. Yeah.
Oh yes, yes. The last one.
Like that's a sweet sweatshirt, right? Like that's
really we have a story about that. It's like we met at BitBlock Boom, like we said, and we were having a conversation because we're like, oh, it's good. Let's go get some swag or something. And conference swag is like great in its own realm, but yeah. It's like we didn't want to actually buy any of the conference t-shirts because it's like all loud and stuff. And we were both talking like, I wish there needs to be something a little more minimalistic. Like more that, we did that. It doesn't shout it to the world, like Bitcoin, blah blah. Mm-hmm. And then we saw a guy with a T-shirt that just said "few" on it, and we're like, "That's exactly what we're talking about." And it's like, yeah. Well, we should make some of our own clothes because we want to wear it.
Yes, and exactly.
And we want to signal. I mean, that we're Bitcoiners, and what was going to next, we always looked at it as kind of a way in. Oh, like what you said is like, we're not developers. We weren't going to get into sales of, you know, working at one of the exchanges or whatever. But we were both like, once you get the itch, you're like, we know we're going to work in this industry one day. We might as well contribute somehow. And then this is just a stepping stone because we want to go and share stories and Orangeville people and spread it to more hands.
Yeah, because when you're wearing Bitcoin swag, it always sparks a conversation everywhere you go. Obviously, sometimes you might want to keep it low key and not shout it, you know, like, hey, I have Bitcoin. But sometimes it's just nice to, you know, signal, especially when you're going to meetups as well. But it's happened many times for us that we were wearing something Bitcoin related and people were like, hey, I like your hat. And are you into Bitcoin? Blah, blah, blah. And it starts a whole conversation
and then you have to tell them not crypto because they want to bring up other cryptos, then you orange fill them, but
but if you
got it down all,
you know, I honestly think like if you create a good product or a good service for a fair price, like that's what Bitcoin is about, you know, is like money is there for one of the things is to trade, and I think that's trading something that's good for a fair price. There's nothing wrong with that.
Hey, Bitcoin Twitter is rough, man. I mean, there's some very very sour people on Bitcoin Twitter, and there's a lot of doom and gloom on Twitter as well. You know, we always like focus on everything that's bad in the world and all that. Yeah. Sometimes I don't even like logging in because there's like
Golden Oster,
pura vida, exactly. But even there, you know, it's not going to change. I mean, ultimately, you know, people are going to post the same stuff there. I mean, we're still all the same people. And yeah, I don't know, man. Sometimes. Anyway, let me just keep it positive. Like, I love what you guys are doing. And, you know, whenever you guys post, I'm seeing like beautiful scenery out of Guatemala and like buying coffee with Bitcoin. And that's like the kind of stuff I think we need a lot more of. So please keep that coming because it's that's the kind of stuff I log in for, you know.
Thanks, man. That means a lot to us.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what the intention behind our trip was as well, too. Spread the word about this little citadel that's highly underrated. And like we had mentioned it to people in our meetup and to other friends as well, there are Bitcoiners and they had no idea that Bitcoin League was even a thing. And so we wanted to spread the word about it. And it was just so nice to see comments under that thread of people saying, oh, this really makes me want to go and visit Guatemala. I think I'm going to go now. I just booked my flight. I was like, yes. Please, they need more attention. They need more.
Like I said, it's all it's completely grassroots, all volunteer work. No one's making any money off this.
Yeah,
so exactly. Like, and now that they're accepting it, they need to get people that come visit, right? So like, I literally just booked for Costa Rica. So I'm literally like booking, okay, like the airline ticket, I know I'm not going to be able to buy Bitcoin. But the minute I look for like little places to stay or to eat, I'm already like planning ahead, like, okay, where can I find the places that accept Bitcoin? And I love calling them and like, you accept Bitcoin? Yeah, perfect, you know? So now, yeah, that's how I like to plan my trip. So yeah, Guatemala is definitely on that list now.
You would think like a lot of travelers and expats would learn about Bitcoin purely for the fact that like, it just saves you so much wasted fees, like so many fees.
It's weird when you get on the Bitcoin standard and like we try to go and like you said, Marcus, like plan around big places that accept Bitcoin, and then you start paying in Bitcoin and it's like, well, okay, the whole day was in Bitcoin or at least using the network. and then you go somewhere that doesn't accept Bitcoin, like when we come back to Guadalajara, and I have to wait for the person to bring the thing over, and then it's to the POS system, and then to put the card in, and then to wait, and then it failing, and then put it back in, and then I have to sign, and it's like, you click this thing, and it's like, it feels like you go back in time. If you want a Bitcoin stand for more than a day, it's like, you're just like, oh, this is bullshit. This doesn't work well. And so,
and then they ask you to sign this wrinkled up little copy of like a credit card receipt. You know, it's like, okay, why am I like, where is this thing going that I'm signing?
Exactly.
It's funny, but I also just hope that, you know, by doing that, you know, like maybe the neighboring hotel or restaurant will be like, hey, wait a minute, there's all these people going to this Bitcoin restaurant, maybe I should do it too, you know, because obviously they're pulling in more customers this way. So I mean, we're gonna have to do it together.
And we witnessed that, man. It's happening. It absolutely is happening. It might not happen as fast as we want, but it's 100% happening.
It's happening in multiple parts of the world, and that's, we love to travel, and we love Bitcoin, so we felt like combining the two is, it's great, it's ideal for us, and that's also part of the reason why we want to go to Guatemala, because we've never been there before, and because they're living on a Bitcoin standard in a small town in the middle of nowhere. And so
Bitcoin tourism is going to be absolutely huge. We want to go to Lugano and then to Boracay and then whatever. We were joking about this yesterday. It's like, by the time we're done with those, there's going to be three other cities that we want to go to. Like, we obviously want to go to Costa Rica. There's places popping up everywhere.
Bitcoin jungle out in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Bitcoin city in Honduras in Roatan.
Yeah.
So there's a ton right there in Central America.
Which is all legal there in Roatan. Like, they have their own, like,
they're self-regulated.
Yeah, it's like an autonomous.
There we go.
And then the little citadels popping up in Africa as well.
I can hook you up with the guys, and you too, Marcus, with the guys in Bitcoin Jungle too. If you guys don't know them, just
we met Lee actually.
I met Lee down in El Salvador. Yeah.
We met him there. We actually didn't know who he was, but he was wearing the Hope House T-shirt. The black one, the painting, and we made that one, and we donated it to Hope House, and so we're going up to everyone that had that T-shirt. Just to introduce ourselves, and like, who are you? By the way, we made a T-shirt. Glad you like it. Yeah. And that's how we met him, and he was really cool, and he invited us to go over.
Yeah, we had no idea that it was growing that quickly in Costa Rica too. It's like, it's another place, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, they have Nostraca coming up in right there in Bitcoin Jungle in
Ubica. We really wanted to go.
When is it happening?
Next week.
I believe it's like the 20th of March, if I'm not mistaken.
Are you gonna be there for that, Marcus?
I'm gonna leave 2 days before it starts. But I'm gonna be right there. That's my specialty. I always leave before like the big
You were in Miami like right before the conference too.
I missed the Miami conference. Yeah, it's out of my control. I'm sorry, I can't do anything about it. But I'm super excited to at least go to Ubita, where like all the Nasser. Yeah. I believe even Jack Dorsey is there right now. So who knows? I might get lucky and see him there. Who knows?
Francis.
Yeah, I'm going to Bitcoin Retreat in Bitcoin Island. That's in the Philippines.
I've heard a lot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, they have over 250 businesses accepting Bitcoin already. So it's going to be very interesting to go and.
Are you guys going there? Is that planned already?
Yeah, we're going.
I'm trying to get out to Africa. That's where I'm trying to get out.
Yeah, Africa, man.
No, they're trying to organize a conference for next year, so we're hoping to go.
It's going. It's worldwide.
Yeah,
but be careful though. Like, I unmasked like this scammer on Twitter too, who was coming up in spaces with, you know, I was doing the in the spaces with Lucas from the Bitcoin Global Fest, and he had like some legitimate like Africans up there, and then this other guy from like, I think it was like BTC Tanzania or Tanzania BTC.
He DM'd me.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
So, and there's this other guy. I don't want to mention him, but there's this other two accounts actually that I have the feeling that are doing the exact same thing. So they're posting a bunch of like Bitcoin maximalist stuff with nice pictures, and they have like this script of follow me along for Bitcoin adoption in Africa, etc. And they're like gaining, and then they're approaching people in DM saying, you know, I need to buy some miners to educate people at the university. But you just really got to like go in there and verify that they're actually doing the work and not just like affinity scamming. You know? So yeah, it's sad, but they're getting better.
Great reminder.
Yeah.
Because she discovered that people were kind of on to that guy in Africa that was looked legit on the outside, but clearly was like starting to do his scam work.
Yeah,
that's why it's important to be connected with Bitcoiners, because when someone that does talk to you, you just go, hey, does anyone know this person? Does anyone know? You know, and if no one knows them, it's like,
trust me.
You know, I don't trust you. Right?
Yeah, thanks for posting or at least commenting on that, Marcus. But I think that's how we found the thread there. Was like, what was that guy?
You were seeing how he wasn't answering your questions about like who took the pictures and
Because he took like pictures of like a Ghana meetup, it turns out, afterwards. And I love it, right? Like you kind of question a little bit, and then more Bitcoiners jump in and they're like Google imaging like the photo. Yeah. Because he said, I was at his university lecturing, and he had like three pictures of like African students, you know, and one half of them had like a Binance shirt. So it looks legit, but like I got a little bit wary because of different reasons, because he was in my DMs on Telegram and I didn't trust it. And then when I look at his pictures, I was like, wait a second, you know, like these two pictures are completely different locations. You know, that was obvious from like the photo.
Yeah.
And then I kind of asked him about it, and somebody else then Google imaged it and found out that that picture that he was using was like from a previous conference, not in Tanzania, but in Ghana somewhere. Yeah.
Good investigative work. It's needed.
Yeah, thank you for that.
And it sucks, you know, because you get so tired of it, right? Because here's some guy, and he's already has like a thousands of followers, and you know, like big accounts are following him, and you know, you can't reach everybody. I can retweet, but then not everybody's gonna see my tweet either. And it's just like, where do you start? You know, everybody just has to be like really careful and aware all the time, basically.
Sherlock Marcus out here.
It's like mopping with like the faucet open. You know, it's like you can't.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Blake, Carla, thanks, guys. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's always fun talking to you guys. I mean, me and Blake met with, you know, Greg and me met Blake in a food truck line at Miami 21.
I love that.
That was awesome. I'll never forget that. You know, and then met Carla the next year in Miami. So,
we like being around you guys.
Give people a handoff where they can find you. Let us know about, you know, Hodling Apparel, anything else that you guys are working on. We'd love to be able to help you guys out and get the word out.
Thank you. Well, I mean, Hodling Carla on Twitter. I'm also on Noster. We have a Hodling Apparel set up to, we're thinking of starting a blog type thing together with the shop. Now that we're going to visit a bunch of citadels, and we just want to spread the word a little bit about them, and tweeting is not enough sometimes, and it's hard to capture everything that you've experienced in a day, or let alone a whole week, and just a mini thread on Twitter. So and there's just a lot more that we want to say about Guatemala, so we might start writing about it.
She's a writer, so she's trained. I'm not helping in that. but yeah, just help with tours, like give people facts about the area. And so, yeah, just kind of have like a blog and let people know.
Tips of people who to contact, where to go, things to avoid and whatnot. Because there's a lot of people that don't know about these places, or even these countries like El Salvador or Guatemala. They're still very new to all that. So
just want to spread it.
Yeah, just want to encourage more people to come to these places and experience it for themselves. So
facts over fear, right? Facts over fear. Like a lot of times those facts can it can take away that fear.
People like that.
Okay.
Exactly.
Marcus, any final words, Marcus?
I think Blake still, you're skipping over Blake here. I don't know if Blake has any hand up. First of all, Carla, like, I love that, right? I mean, I think we need a lot more people I don't know. It's just like the enthusiasm and, you know, the excitement and the authentic. I always miss the word, but it's just like that's really inspiring. That's what I get back a lot from people as well. They're like, hey, well, you know, I can see maybe like all the arguments don't land or they don't remember everything, but they can tell that you're like serious about this and that there's something more there to discover. So, awesome. Yeah.
Okay, wrap it on that. That was perfect.
They may not remember what you say, but they'll remember how they felt, you know?
That's important.
These conversations are always way too short, guys. I love talking to you guys. And like we didn't even get to do like our standard finishing questions, Sean. But I guess you want to wrap it up time wise. But thank you guys in any case, and maybe we'll get to do it again sooner than we know.
Yeah, the conversation was more interesting.
I've understood that people who are going to come to the having party are going to be able to find their apparel there at the having party. So that's going to be
cool. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you. And then for everyone else tuning in, remember that we have the Meme Factory podcast every Thursday, 7:30 p.m. live Eastern Standard Time. Don't miss out on that. And remember, what you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, don't just let it stay here. Please share, like, subscribe, let people know about Bitcoiner's Guide. And as for Bitcoiner's Guide, episode 47 from Carla, Blake, Clan Marcus, and Big Sean, we're over and out. Peace.